This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we'll visit with the number two man in the Louisiana House of Representatives, Walt Leger, representative from New Orleans, and we'll talk with him primarily about L.A. Swift. The bus route from Baton Rouge to New Orleans and back has gotten a one-month reprieve. That's 1 month, ending on July 31st, unless $750,000 in matching funds are found. We'll talk with Walt Leger about the efforts to save L.A. Swift. The U.S. House rejected its own version of the federal farm bill yesterday, which protects Louisiana's sugar crops. And we'll talk about this development with the man who heads the American Sugarcane League, Jim Simone of Louisiana. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing. Your numbers are 877-217-5757, wherever you are. And if you're dialing locally, you may dial 297-5633. You may also reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest to begin is Representative Walt Leger III, state representative from District 91 in New Orleans and the Speaker pro tem of the Louisiana House of Representatives, the youngest member ever to serve in the second highest position in the House of Representatives. And it's a good day for Walt Leger. I think it's a day before your birthday, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It sure is. I'll be 35 tomorrow. So
you were born on the same day, 31 years apart from Peter Press Maravich.
I know that. I'm a huge fan of his. I wish that I could have done about 30% of what he could do on the basketball court.
Well, unfortunately, he died at 40, but he set some records that will never be broken, and he did so
right about that
at your alma mater, Louisiana State University.
He did. I used to watch all of his videotapes as a kid and try to learn how to handle the ball like he did. I never quite got there, but what an amazing talent.
I don't think anybody ever got there, but he was put it right, an amazing talent, and he's been dead now for 25 years, but the legend of Pistol Pete lives on and will long after each of us is dead and gone.
Absolutely.
Speaking of dead and gone, a new life, at least for a month, for L.A. Swift.
Yes.
What's happening?
Well, first of all, I'm so grateful to the Department of Transportation, Development Secretary LeBond, and the governor's office to continue to work with us through this this difficult time for the L.A. Swift program. This they have agreed to extend the service for one additional month to allow local officials, economic development organizations, and elected officials to continue to work to find some matching dollars to fill the need to continue this program. There are I'm not sure if you're familiar with the history of it, but the L.A. Swift program was started in October of 2005, just a few months after Hurricane Katrina affected South Louisiana, and it was designed to allow for people to get to and from the city of New Orleans from places where they had evacuated. Many of those folks were in Baton Rouge. It's a way of getting them to and from work, but also getting to and from their homes that needed to be repaired so that they could return to Baton Rouge at night and have a safe place to stay. It has since changed its characteristics dramatically, and today it offers about 12,000 rides a month to people who are getting to and from places of work, to and from healthcare appointments, to and from visits with family, and it's become a real successful and important intra-city bus system that provides over 150,000 rides a year. And our surveys show that more than 50% of those rides are being taken by people to get to and from their jobs. So it's really critically important for a workforce transit perspective, and I think an economic engine that connects our two largest cities.
It's $750,000 the state must pony up, and that comes with matching funds from the federal government, 2-to-1, $1.5 million. Why is this even an issue at all? Why didn't an appropriation for $750,000 come without a fight at the Capitol?
Well, we certainly had discussions throughout the session. you're well aware of the financial situation that the state finds itself in, and we continue to look for ways to trim budgets. The Department of Transportation and Development historically has been focused on the development and the building of roads and highways. I think that they see their role as actual managers of contracts related to transportation services as something that's not in their traditional scope. They've done it over the last few years because they found it to be important, but state funds at this time were just too difficult to come by to continue this program. We feel comfortable that at this point that we are finding ways each and every day to either cut costs related to the programs, which reduces the amount of match necessary, but more importantly, we're finding partners from local government and others that are willing to put up either cash or in-kind contributions to help sustain this program because they recognize the economic significance of it and the importance of continuing to find innovative ways to connect Baton Rouge to New Orleans and New Orleans to Baton Rouge so that we can move people to and from places of work and really figure out a way to compete as a super region with other areas in the South and other areas in the nation. Together we're much stronger than we are apart, and I think that in the post-Katrina world, we've come to realize that a lot more so than we have in the past, and this is a really vital foundational link to continuing to establish that economic connection between our two great cities.
Well, I must give Adam Knapp some credit, the head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. He's been on the phone asking for support from business people, including yours truly, by the way, and I think he's gotten some support, but $750,000 is a lot of money to most of us. You got to make a lot of calls usually to get that kind of money.
Adam deserves a tremendous amount of credit. He certainly has been working very hard. We've been working with the Center for Planning Excellence, Rachel DiResto. We've been working with Michael Hecht at G&O Inc. I've been working with people in the city of New Orleans and in the region trying to identify not only opportunities for private entities to contribute in kind. I assume Adam was asking for some assistance with marketing. And I hope that you'll be able to help if you can. There are many others that we've approached, and we've been fortunate to receive commitments from many to put up some in-kind contributions. I believe the city of Kenner has come up with an in-kind contribution for storage of some of the equipment, some of the buses and otherwise. We're also, I think, very fortunate to have the strong support of the mayors of both of these cities. And the Department of Transportation, as I said, they've committed to work with us through this process, to work with the Federal Transit Administration and with the regional director of the FTA to try to ensure that all of these contributions, whether they be cash or in kind, will be counted towards this match. And every day we chip away a little bit at that number. And I'm confident that if over the next 6 weeks we keep working hard, we can figure out a way to keep this service rolling so that the thousands of Louisianians who use it on an annual basis can get to and from their places of business and support their families and contribute to the economic vitality of our region.
Bo in the Garden District. Good morning, Bo. You're on the air with Representative Leger.
Good morning, Jim, and Representative Leger. I appreciate your hard work on this issue. I think one thing that's going to come out of this is people will understand how many different folks in Baton Rouge and New Orleans use the SWIFT and that it's not something that, you know, can just fall off into the night. So I appreciate your work. And as we kind of piecemeal some funding together, I hope that we can continue to work towards a permanent funding structure. I know two points that I want to make about the bus, you know, that haven't been mentioned. One, it's the only way for somebody to, you know, kind of throw a bike on the bottom or throw a bike on the bus and head down to New Orleans or back up to Baton Rouge. So for people who use alternative means of transportation, also it's the easiest way for someone in a wheelchair to get back and forth between the two cities. So there are a lot of people are involved in this bus. A lot of people use it. And I think with this unfortunate publicity, a lot more will use it. I appreciate you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. I think those are just two excellent points, and I appreciate them being made. Certainly. You know, traditionally, the state of Louisiana has not been a leader when it comes to moving people in the mass transit arena. And the southern part of our nation suffers, similar from similar issues, and that is, the state of Louisiana is largely a rural state, as are our neighbors in the South, and with a few population centers, and it just hasn't been a focus over time to use mass transit to connect our cities together. I've been working with the Southern Rail Commission on passenger rail issues as it relates to the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama over the last several years. I think that this is one of the things that's been a true success story in the wake of Katrina. It's something that originally was designed as a disaster recovery and hurricane recovery tool, but it's developed into so much more than that, and it's shown us, I think, at a foundational level, what we can hope to achieve moving forward in the future. I think that losing this opportunity to continue a service that so many people use today and more people will continue to use would be a step in the wrong direction, and that's why I think it's so critical that we keep working very hard over the next 6 weeks to ensure that we can find a way to keep it going for the next year and into the future.
297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation with Representative Walt Leger, who at 34 years and 364 days is the number two person in the Louisiana House of Representatives. Is there any way to charge the riders to come up with a fee, writes Leonard Joseph?
The riders currently pay $5 per ride, and certainly we've explored the idea of increasing the fee by $1 or $2. Surveys suggest that a vast majority of people would continue to use the service if we increased it, slightly. My guess is that will be part of the solution. There may be a $1 per ride increase or otherwise. At the end of the day, what that does, though, is it goes back into the operations side of the LA Swift bus service. It doesn't necessarily help get us any closer when it comes to the match. So it does reduce the overall cost of providing the service. It doesn't. It only has an incremental impact on the dollars that we have to come up with. But it is a positive impact. And so my guess is that as we move forward, that will be probably a part of the solution.
The Louisiana Center, or the Center for Planning Excellence, as well as the Greater New Orleans Foundation, Ride New Orleans, and AARP, conducted a survey. And these are some of the findings. 51% of those who use L.A. Swift do so to get to and from work. That's more than half. 44% ride to visit their family or friends. 14% ride to get access to health care services. 32% of the riders do not have a car. 27% are Medicaid eligible. 74% come from households with less than $40,000 income. And 81% are identified as African American. There have been some naysayers who claim that this just allows the criminal element to get on a bus and come to Baton Rouge or New Orleans and wreak havoc. But, in the almost 8 years now since this service began, I don't know of any incidents I've heard of fights or any kind of mayhem on buses that involve L.A. Swift. You heard anything of that to that effect?
Never. I've never heard that. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if there had been an incident or two over the course of the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years that this has been operating, but that's never been a concern. Security is provided on these buses, so there is a security official available to ensure that people have safe passage. But I've reviewed much of the survey, not all of it certainly, but the reality is people keep coming back to use this service because it's clean, it's efficient, it operates in an efficient manner, and it allows people to get to and from where they're going safely, whether it be their place of business or the hospital or a doctor's appointment. One of the responses from one of the riders that really struck me was, this is the only, one of the responders said, this is the only way I can see my daughter at Children's Hospital. And, for me, that really struck me because many of us take for granted the ability to own a vehicle and get to and from, appointments or other places that we need to be with.
297-5633. We'll take a 90-second pause and return with Representative Walt Leger of New Orleans. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. State transportation officials announced yesterday that the L.A. Swift service that runs 7 days a week will be extended 1 month to July 31st. It was slated to end June 30th when 100% of the federal funding ends because the state has not come up at this point with $750,000 in local matching funds. 297-5633 to join the conversation with Representative Walt Leger of New Orleans, who's a proponent of this service. And Tim in Broadmoor, you're on the air with Representative Leger. Hi, Tim.
Hi, and thank you so much for doing this show. I just wanted to say that I'm a rider on L.A. Swift. I commute back and forth for work. I've done so since Katrina. And when, after putting a $250,000 on my personal vehicle, it died in 2010. And I was not immediately able to purchase another vehicle, so L.A. Swift became my lifesaver. And it really allows me to safely go back and forth between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. You know, New Orleans is my home city. Baton Rouge has now become my adopted city. I have two home cities. I never thought I'd find myself living in Baton Rouge, but it allows me to, because of the Wi-Fi, it allows me to do work back and forth. It's such a convenience that I don't know how I would do without it. In fact, whenever I have to drive to New Orleans, I consider an infringement on my time. Swift has become such a lifeline for so many people. I've been on the bus when wheelchair riders, as you have indicated, have gotten on the bus. I have been on the bus when I've watched people walk from across the street from the hospital with their belongings, you know, as if they had just been discharged and be able to get on the bus. So it's become a convenience and a lifeline for so many people.
Well, thank you. I bet you've made some friends, too. I bet you see some of the same people, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of become a bus family. And it's a lifeline. It's not just a convenience. It's become a lifeline. And a way of life for so many of us.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
All right. Is your real name Tim?
My real name is Tim. It's short for something.
All right, Tim. Thank you. I appreciate it. Representative?
Thank you so much for calling. You know, I mean, I think that says it all. It's become not only a lifeline and critically important for individuals, but it's also important for the businesses by which they're employed. It allows them to maintain continuity with their workers and their staffing patterns, regardless of the ability to travel to and from these two places. And I think what also is really important about what you said is that she feels that she has two home cities now, and we need to continue to foster that kind of mentality and attitude between the two great cities of New Orleans and Baton Rouge, because it makes us so much stronger as a region when we want to compete with other parts of the country for economic development opportunities and otherwise. And we're all very much aware of the power that exists between the city of New Orleans and Baton Rouge. If you just follow the river, the billions of dollars invested in the petrochemical industry and in other industries, and how, you know, how connecting these two regions is just the future of where we want to go in this state. And so this is the foundation of that. We can improve upon mass transit, but we'll never improve upon it if we don't maintain this foundation of this bus service. And that's why I just think it couldn't be more important that we continue to work with DOTD and with the Federal Transit Administration to figure out a sustainable way to keep this service rolling.
Judy in Beauregard Town writes, why doesn't L.A. Swift go to the New Orleans airport? It costs less than parking 2 days. Maybe the airports in Baton Rouge and New Orleans would kick in a little money if they went there, if the service went there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's something that's been explored. You know, the bus does have 8 routes a day that run between Monday and Friday. They make stops in a few places in New Orleans and a few places in Baton Rouge. They also make stops in Kenner, Laplace, Sorrento, and Gonzales. And, on the weekends, they make 5 trips a day. Some of the trips make multiple stops. Some of the trips are a little bit more express, and that's just something that I guess has been worked on with the provider of the service, but we could certainly continue to discuss our options. With the funding levels the way they are, it's hard for me to believe that we could increase the number of stops, but we will absolutely explore partnerships with those airports as we move forward to determine whether or not there can be some matching funds available if we include stops at those locations. I think it's a great idea.
Carolyn writes, can the employers of people using the service to get to work offer paid or discounted passes as a benefit to their employees to use the bus? She continues, in areas of the country that support public transportation for employees, the benefit becomes one of the most cherished by the worker and builds loyalty to their employer.
Again, it's another thing that we're exploring when it comes to the matching dollars. I think, obviously, employers are open to participate currently. But we're exploring with FTA and with DOTD all of those types of options. We're leaving no stone unturned, and we're going to continue to work to ensure that whatever types of contributions may be available, that we get those fully recognized and utilized as matching funds so that we can keep this service going. But, I mean, again, I think your viewers are obviously tuned in, and they all have the right kind of thoughts in mind, and we're studying and requesting opinions on all of these types of things when it from the FTA and DOTD experts to ensure that the dollars we do piece together do get recognized as matching so that we can meet our obligation and keep the service rolling for these workers and who need it.
Joel in Baton Rouge writes, stop the madness. This was a stopgap measure not intended to be permanent. If it has to be permanent, it should be self-sustaining without state or federal funds. This mentality has to stop if we are ever to get our spending under control, writes Joel. Representative?
Certain. We obviously have a disagreement on this issue. Public transportation throughout the history of this nation has traditionally been subsidized in some form or another. In rare instances, it can be self-sustaining. But that being said, I think that we're exploring every opportunity to try to figure out a way to make it self-sustaining. If we can find a way to do that, then we're going to work towards doing that. If the provider of this service could find a way to make it economically profitable for him to do it, certainly they would do it. But to keep the charges at this level, it requires some sort of a subsidy from either the state or federal government. But in my mind, it's an investment in economic development and connecting the two economic engines of our state together, so that as a region, we can compete with other regions in the southern part of this nation. And this helps businesses. It helps working families to access those jobs that keep our economy going. And it's an important investment in economic development that's recognized by economic development experts across the political horizons. This is really a nonpartisan issue to me. It makes common sense, and it helps people get to their jobs. I think that we need to continue to explore ways to make it self-sustaining, but in the absence of that, we need to figure out a way to keep it going.
All right. LJ writes, buses replace as many as 60 cars on our crowded streets, and that might be another reason why some taxpayer money is a good thing in this case.
Well, We do spend billions of dollars on our roads and highways in this nation and in this state. We have a $16 billion backlog in road projects across the state of Louisiana, an issue that I think the legislature truly needs to try to address in the coming years. We can't continue to expand I-10 between Baton Rouge and New Orleans as more and more vehicles get on it. And I think that's part of the reason why we've got to continue to explore other mass transit opportunities as we move forward. At this time, this is the one available to the people of our region. This is a system that provides 160,000 or so rides on an annual basis to get people to and from work and to other necessary appointments that they have, whether they be health care and otherwise. And like you said, when you got 60 people on the bus at a time, it's one bus instead of 60 cars. I drive that route between Baton Rouge and New Orleans a lot, and it's amazing to me when you look around and see how many vehicles have one person in them. And, you know, mm-hmm. So, and that's me. sometimes. But it also causes the traffic and congestion that we often find on I-10 between our two good cities. And
all right.
This does help alleviate some of those concerns.
Bill writes, what about talking to Megabus about expanding routes from New Orleans to Baton Rouge? He continues, Megabus already operates out of New Orleans. Any thoughts about
Certainly
this?
We'll look into that. I'm not familiar with them.
All right.
But I'll be happy to look into that.
Right. Rinaldi in Sherwood. Rinaldi, you're on the air with Representative Walt Leger.
Representative Leger, thank you so much. Listen, I've ridden the L.A. Swift, and quick ride, I agree with everybody. If it would go to the airport, I would jump on it in a minute. I lived in New England for about 8 years, and if you needed to get between Hartford, Connecticut, and New York, you jumped on what was called the commuter system there. I mean, I could virtually walk to a train, Jim, from my town in New Britain, Connecticut, catch a train, and catch the plane to LaGuardia or out of JFK without much of a problem. And I do think, given that the state of Louisiana has done so much to invite economic development in forms of tax credits and all kinds of other things, that we should do all that we can to help working class families continue to work. This, to me, when people say we shouldn't subsidize mass transit either in Baton Rouge through CATS, which is another subject, Jim, I know, or through helping people with this project, I think it's a bit ridiculous given the small amount of money, since we had a, what, $14, $15 billion budget to come up with $750,000.
More than that.
The governor doesn't ever spend that on travel. Just kidding, Jim.
Well, I agree with you. I think that there are certainly dozens of examples of places around the country who do mass transit a lot better than we do here. And I agree with your point. It's about $750,000 that we have to come up with from local sources, private sources, and otherwise to try to keep this service rolling. It's a $2.3 million cost on an annual basis. We believe we can probably get that cost down a little bit, and we may have to reduce a route or two to do it, but we'll at least be able to continue to provide the important service while we continue to look for sustainable ways of doing it in the future. But if we want to really be economically competitive with different regions in the South and other parts of this country, we've got to invest in these types of things. It is a huge winner for business to know that they can attract skilled and quality workers from places beyond the borders of either the city of New Orleans or simply the city of Baton Rouge. And rather, if you have a business in Baton Rouge and you want to attract skilled workers from New Orleans, they can still have an easy way to get to and from work on a daily basis. Same could be said for a business that starts in New Orleans. I mean, we've got to be able to do this to really be competitive.
297-5633, still time to get in with Representative Walt Leger, Speaker Pro Tem of the Louisiana House of Representatives. Charles on North Foster. Hi, Charles.
Good.
Yes,
good morning, Representative. It's taking me 20 minutes to ask these questions.
Yes, sir.
What's your question?
If the Attorney General can hire lawyers than us and Mississippi uses its own lawyers, why don't we take some of that money and use some of our staff attorneys in Louisiana government? My other question is...
All right. That's one question per customer. Charles, got his in. What's your response?
I'm not sure exactly what the question
well,
is.
I think he's talking about expenditures of funds, and that it comes down to a matter of priorities.
I think that there are a number of things in state government that you could argue that we should be spending funds on different things and setting different types of priorities. Obviously, I would have preferred to be able to find state dollars to fund the L.A. Swift program and keep it operating, but we're trying to be creative and think outside the box, and we're working to do that. When it comes to hiring skilled lawyers to handle litigation for the state of Louisiana, you know, the Attorney General's job is to put together the best team that he can to be able to litigate the claims as it relates to the state of Louisiana and recover dollars that can be reinvested in things that are important here. The methodology by which he does that, is open for debate and interpretation, and other states do things differently. We ought to be looking at the best practices across the nation and ensure that we put together the best legal teams that we can. And I think, as usual, we just always need to be trying to improve the way that we do things.
Joseph writes, the process for funding L.A. Swift is the same as funding our roads. In this case, there is a user fee per use. He's answering those who say that this is a government boondoggle that should stop.
Yeah, I think he's, I mean, that's an accurate, I think that's an accurate statement. Certainly we're, the people who are using it are helping and assisting and funding it. But I'm very clearly convinced that being able to move workers between our two most important economic engine cities in our state is critical. And we ought to be looking at ways to connect Shreveport to Baton Rouge and New Orleans, and Lake Charles to Baton Rouge and New Orleans, and Alexandria to Baton Rouge and New Orleans, and having interconnectivity between our cities, Monroe and others. But, you know, this is sort of the foundation of that. And if you lose the foundation, well, then it's hard to build out from there. The future of our state is going to require that we be more interconnected and that we have a ease of use in moving people easily between our major population centers. And if you can't do that on this foundational level and you can't succeed in keeping this going, then it makes it that much more difficult to accomplish the other things in the future.
Well, the governor shot down the proposed rail system from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. It would seem that this would be the next best thing. Is there contempt for people who ride public transportation?
Certainly not from my point of view. I think that public transportation presents opportunities for people to get to and from work. And one of your callers said that the Wi-Fi that's enabled on this bus allows her to do work while she's on the bus. Certainly, I think we can all recognize that there is benefit to being able to be on a train or on a bus or on some other sort of public transit system that doesn't require you to operate it. You can then operate your cell phone, you can text, you can check emails, and you can do other things that may help you to be more productive in your work life. That happens in many other metropolitan areas around our nation on a daily basis. The governor did not support the rail funding that was coming down from Washington. He did so because I guess he didn't believe that that money should be spent. Of course, the money was spent in other places for rail projects. I think we should have taken that money, and I know that former Secretary LaHood wishes that we would have. That being said, Washington isn't always the answer to our problems, and so Representative Jackson and I passed legislation to create a Louisiana Interstate Rail Compact, which is made up of local governments between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, and their representatives of each of the parishes between Orleans Parish and East Baton Rouge Parish, that will soon be gathering to kind of continue to look at options there may be for funding rail in the future between our cities, whether it be high speed or otherwise. The reality is we just need reliable, safe transportation opportunities for the people to move between New Orleans and Baton Rouge and all the parishes in between.
Representative, we got to roll, but we will follow this story with you.
Jim.
Thank you. Happy birthday, and let's see what happens with L.A. Swift. Thank
Great.
You, sir.
Thank you.
297-5633 is your number. We'll return with Jim Simone, head of the American Sugarcane League, after this 90-second timeout on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF. There we go. A little adjustment here. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're joined by Jim Simone, the man who heads the American Sugarcane League, and this has been a busy week for him. As we noted at the beginning of the program, the U.S. House rejected its own version of the Federal Farm Bill yesterday, which largely protected the sugar crop in our state. And good morning to you, Jim Simone.
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on this morning. And yes, indeed, it has been a busy week for us. So a lot of unanswered questions. We're still trying to pick through things here and figure out what the next step is. But we've got some work ahead of us.
So what happens next?
Well, that's big questions here, Jim. We the leadership in the House, both from the House Ag Committee and leadership of the House itself, has to get together and figure out what the next step is. The possibility of an extension, we're operating under an extension right now. And so there's always a possibility of an extension, or maybe the House gets back together and figures out a way to cobble up enough votes to pass a farm bill and then bring it to conference with the Senate. So still a lot of unanswered questions here.
The vote was not close, 234 to 195. Were you surprised at that?
I think most folks were. You know, based upon whip counts earlier in the week, it looked like the votes were going to be there to pass the bill. And I think at the end of the day, you know, the Republicans and Democrats are pointing fingers at each other as to who's at fault and all of those things. But amendments, some last-second amendments, probably created some dislike on the Democratic side and lost some key votes that may have put it over the top, cuts to the SNAP and food stamp programs that some of the Democratic folks wouldn't tolerate. So a lot to work on here. Well, a good thing, though, the sugar provisions, there were amendments to try to completely eliminate our sugar program, and we were able to defeat those amendments. So from a pure sugar perspective, we were looking forward to final passage, but obviously that didn't happen.
How significant is this industry to our state in particular?
Well, sugar's a billion-dollar farm gate. Jim, that's just the pure farm gate. When you add the economic multipliers, you're talking about a $3 billion industry for Louisiana. You know, we've been producing cane for over 200 years. We've fought through wars and catastrophes and hurricanes and disease and everything else. This is another battle that we'll have to endure, and I'm confident that some kind of way our industry is going to figure out a way to persist and get over this recent setback, so we'll figure it out.
Now, as you know, some columnists, both in our state and beyond, James Gill and George Will in particular, Gill and Will, they've taken aim at the sugar industry. Here's something from Mr. Gill, who now writes for the Baton Rouge Advocate. Sugar prices in this country have run at double the world average or even higher. He's blaming this on the might of the industry. Is that fair?
Well, you know, you can make numbers look any way you want. And what folks that oppose us do is compare our domestic raw prices to retail prices around the world and come up with these astronomic differences. Right now, U.S. raw sugar prices, which are the prices that our growers in Louisiana receive, are less than the world market prices. So, you know, you can pick out a point in time and make some argument like that's a shallow argument. But the fact of the matter is our producers are efficient and effective, and what all of these arguments boil down to is whether or not we want our country to be dependent upon foreign producers and foreign governments to supply us with our food. We would love nothing more than for the government to be completely out of our business. And in exchange, we just ask that every other government around the world get out of their sugar business. And if that's the case, then I'm confident that Louisiana's sugarcane farmers would be able to effectively compete head up with any grower around the world.
Now, George Will wrote the provisions by which Washington transfers wealth from 316 million American consumers to a few thousand sugar producers are part of a temporary commodity support program created during the Great Depression. Obviously, Mr. Will is in the same camp as Mr. Gill. You've heard this before. Is it an old argument, or does it have relevance?
Well, it's the same argument that's been played for years. Will and Gill have their mindsets, and once again, you know, we talk about the ability to compete effectively, and right now our growers, for instance, against Mexico, you know, Mexico can ship as much sugar as they want into this market, and our growers could compete directly head up with Mexican growers, and I think win. I'm confident that we could win. But 20% of Mexico's sugar industry is owned by the government. So our growers aren't competing head up. They're competing against their governments. And, you know, a case in point here, we certainly don't want to become reliant on foreign countries. We did that back in the 1940s. We experienced a situation where we were dependent upon foreign countries for sugar. And during World War II, we had to ration sugar because we couldn't get supplies from the Philippines and Cuba. We certainly don't want American people and our consumers to be reliant on unstable foreign governments. Brazil's a big example of that today.
We're visiting with Jim Simone, the head of the American Sugarcane League. He's held this position for almost a decade. Graduate of LSU, Bachelor of Science in Agricultural Mechanization in 1983, and his experience in the banking industry as well. And yesterday, the U.S. House voted against the federal farm bill, much to the chagrin of people like Agriculture Commissioner Mike Strain. The Louisiana delegation voted 3-4-3 against. Bill Cassidy, Charles Bustani, Rodney Alexander voting for the legislation. Steve Scalise, John Fleming, and Cedric Richmond, kind of an unusual coalition, voting against. Richmond was among 172 Democrats who voted against the measure because of cuts to the food stamp program. Now, what do you think about the politics of this? Is this something that is a reality, or is there a way to get around this?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate, Jim, that the People's House, the House of Representatives in Washington, when something goes right, it's disappointing that they point fingers at each other and not try to figure out how to compromise and get things done. Congressman Fleming and Scalise and Richmond, for their reasons, they voted against the bill. You'll have to check with them as to exactly why. Bustani, Cassidy, and Alexander supported the bill. So they all have their reasons, and I'm sure they're well-founded and probably based upon the desires of their constituents. But we've got to figure out a way to come together here. On the commodity title alone, just the farm bill spending on the commodity title, I'm talking about the agricultural programs, there's a net effect of a 10% cost savings in the proposed farm bill. On the food stamp side, there was about a 3% savings on the SNAP programs and food stamps. I like to think, and it's evident, that the agricultural community has come together and done its fair share in trying to get our fiscal house in order in Washington. You know, if the other authorizing committees in Washington would step up to the plate and follow the lead of the agricultural community in this country, we would be in much better shape in reorganizing and bettering our fiscal situation.
877-217-5757 for Jim Simone, who is president of the American Sugarcane League. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Phil. You're on with Jim.
Good morning, Jim. And Jim, yes, sir. I know. I think a lot of us are really fed up with the gridlock that's going on. And it's so hard to have progress going, for the good of the whole country. But what I would like to ask you, sir, is on the ethanol side of it, I know that there's the processes to turn sugarcane into fuel. It's like a biofuel thing. Is that something that our state is looking at for future, business or production?
There are programs in place for that kind of activity, but in America today, we see more value in producing sugar for consumption versus sugar for ethanol. The real opportunities in Louisiana, sugarcane for renewable energy, are using our waste products, or the bagasse, or the materials that are left over after we process, and using that material to generate electricity is probably the best opportunity we have for producing ethanol. It's an opportunity and something that has some legs potentially down the road, but that's a ways away for us. But we are looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Both U.S. senators are on board with you, aren't they?
Yes. Both Senator Landrieu and Senator Vitter voted for the farm bill out of the Senate. And they also helped us defeat some anti-sugar amendments in the Senate. So we've gotten good support from our senators, Andrew and Vitter.
297-5633 is your number. How many sugar farmers are there in Louisiana?
We've got about 450 or so sugarcane farming families. We've got 11 operating sugar mills in Louisiana. We produce about last year was a record crop, 1,700,000 tons of raw sugar. That's the most sugar we've ever produced in Louisiana. That's enough sugar to feed about 60 million Americans, about 20% of our population. We produce about 20% of America's sugar supply. We also, as a country, import about 30% of our sugar from foreign countries. So America's one of the largest importers in the world of sugar. We're one of the largest producers too.
Where do we, Jim, as a country import most prominently from?
Mexico via NAFTA. The North American Free Trade Agreement gives NAFTA gives Mexico the ability to import as much sugar as they want into the U.S. Second to that would probably be like Brazil, then the CAFTA countries. Colombia is a big importer of the Philippines. But we import from 40 countries around the world as a result of negotiations through the World Trade Organization, the WTO. So our program is a no-cost program. Our sugar farmers, none of our sugar farmers receive any checks from the federal government. Folks calling for reform of our program would like to change us to some program that would actually provide checks to us, but we think this no-cost provision of balancing our market is the right way to go, not just for our sugar industry, but for the American taxpayer.
Well, some, I'm sure, would find it shocking, just from the politics of it, that half of our delegation votes against this measure when Louisiana has such a prominent presence in the sugar industry. As you say, 20% of the sugar in this country comes from Louisiana.
Yeah, and you know, the issue is certainly much broader than just sugar. Our complete delegation supported us on anti-sugar amendments, so they voted with us all on our sugar provisions, but for one reason or another saw fit to some support the overall farm bill and some vote against it. So it's, you know, we've got to look back at what we do as a complete agricultural community and figure out a way to bring the bill to a position that can be supported by all. So still work to do here. We've got some figuring to do. The leadership in the House has got figuring to do. Some ciphering, if you will, Jim.
BJ in Denham Springs. BJ, please be brief. You're on with Jim Simone.
Yeah, hello. How are you doing? This is there's a big problem with using ethanol because, you know, the prices of the food prices are going way high up since we started using ethanol. Corn price has gone up, everything, and the world is dying.
All right. Has ethanol driven prices up, Jim?
Well, that's an argument that some folks use primarily in the corn industry, you know, with corn. But most of the corn that is used in ethanol is a feed grade. It's not a food grade. It's used for animal feeds and that kind of stuff. But corn production has gone through the roof in this country. And to support the additional demand created by ethanol. So there's probably some validity to that argument, but here in America, we spend about 12% of our income on food, and that's extremely reasonable. You know, the most developed countries and the strongest countries in the world are those that spend very little on food, and when you look at America, we've got a cheap and abundant and very plentiful food supply.
Rebecca writes, could Jim Simone discuss what happens between the actual growers and the supermarket? Surely, she notes, the price we pay in the supermarket is higher relative to the price an actual farmer receives.
Yeah, you know, in most food products, there's only about 2% worth of sugar, or 2 cents worth of sugar for every buck that somebody spends on a Hershey's bar or something like that. You know, a $1.35 Hershey bar has 2 cents worth of sugar in it today, and in the 1980s, that candy bar cost about 35 cents, and there was 2 cents worth of sugar in that candy bar there back then. So, in America, the cost of distribution and marketing and packaging is certainly a lot more than the commodity values, and distribution cost alone and packaging cost alone are sometimes more than the pure value of the commodity in food products. So a lot of what consumers spend is eaten up by packaging and distribution.
Well, thank you, Jim Simone. Always good to talk with you. Have a good weekend.
Yeah.
Take care.
Great to visit with you, Jim.
Nice to talk with you, Jim. And Monday we'll be here with Foster Campbell, among other people, the outspoken public service commissioner. Congratulations to the San Antonio Spurs, who had a great season but lost to the Miami Heat last night in the NBA Championship Series. Until Monday, for Kevin, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.